welcome to the Aware Show teleseminar series. This is Lisa Garr. Really glad to be with you guys today. I haven't caught people up on my background. If you're ever listening, or I think I said it once, I host a radio show here in Los Angeles. I've been doing it for 10 years and exploring incredible topics with visionary leaders about how to change your life in any way possible, in a positive way, or to just make it a wonderful, wonderful life. And so we talk about all sorts of beliefs between science and spirituality and nutrition that get us to that place that we really want in our lives. And if we're already living that place, then to make it even fuller and brighter. So that's what we talk about on the radio here in Los Angeles. It's become quite a popular show because a lot of people are so curious about this topic and hungry for information about how to heal their lives and how to improve the quality of their lives. And I have a wonderful team that helps me with all of this. I have Tanya and Gina, the producers, and an incredible teleseminar management team who just rock this whole entire call. We've got thousands of people from 33 different countries on the lines, and today is going to be a fantastic call. One of my very favorite people, and every time I sit in front of Greg Braden, I am honored by his presence because he really is such a big picture thinker with such practical things that we can change right now. Sometimes when you get into the space of wanting to make big changes in the world or even make big changes in your life, you don't know where to start. Greg has a way of bridging that gap between the big changes that need to happen and this massive shift that we're in the middle of right now in history, and bringing that to a practical level of what you and me can do at this moment with our thoughts. And not only is he a best-selling author of 25 years of incredible work, probably longer than that, but he's joining us right here live and in person on the call. So thanks for being with me again, Greg.
Well, Lisa, I am thrilled to be on this call. We're going to cover so much ground today. I can just tell.
Yes, you can.
I want to thank you for your great confidence in my ability to do that in the brief time we have together.
Well, I got to say it was really nice seeing you also. Greg was here at UCLA in Los Angeles at an event here, which was a really cool Evolutionary Leaders Conference. And I haven't seen you in person for a while. And I got to see you for a minute.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if I could say that on this program or not. It was really good to see you because we have worked together for so long, and I think I've seen you physically. I think that was maybe the third time I've seen you.
Right. You've been
in
my radio show.
Person. Yeah.
And then I saw you here, which was so great. And so that evening and then this call has to do with the same topic as this massive shift, and you've written about it in Fractal Time, and you talk about it, and it's the running theme in a lot of your work about this major, major shift that we are in the middle of, this very, very important cycle in history. It's the end of a huge cycle, which will also demystify a lot of the 2012 not being an end, but a beginning of a new cycle. But there's a lot of changes that are underway right now. And if you could start by talking about that, so getting us to that, catching us up to speed in case people haven't heard a previous call that you were on with me, catching people up to speed on the importance of the cycle that we're living in right now.
Well, sure. Well, you've just covered a lot of ground already, Lisa, and this is the bulk of my adult life has been devoted to understanding a mystery that's been revealed in ancient traditions, and now that our own science is beginning to find the language to decode. And that is simply the mystery that exists between us and our world, us and one another, us and a greater power, whatever and however we perceive that greater power. For over 5,000 years, almost universally, our ancestors have said to us in many ways, in temple texts, in spiritual traditions, in ceremony, in myth, in prophecy, in prediction, they've said to us that we are connected to one another in this world in very empowering and life-affirming ways, and they felt it was important for us to know about this connection because of our time in history right now. So this generation, right now, at the end of one great millennium and the beginning of the next, we are experiencing a rare and mysterious moment in the history of civilization itself, in the history of Earth, and of our existence. It is, we're living the last years of a great cycle of time, a 5,125-year-long cycle that is called a Great World Age. And if our listeners want to Google this, they can actually find out there's something called the Doctrine of World Ages that describes the fact that we are, in fact, living the end of a Great World Age that began in 3114 B.C. in the biblical era.
Wow.
It ends with a rare astronomical event in the winter solstice, 2012 A.D., and it marks the end of a cycle that is best depicted in the Mayan calendar, but it is also depicted in other indigenous traditions as well. It's the end of a great world age, and the doctrine tells us there have been at least four great world ages in the past. We're ending the fifth and moving into the sixth. And each time a world age occurs, changes happen upon the earth, and the knowledge of our relationship to one another and the earth help us to get through those changes. And that was where this all kind of comes together this evening.
It sends, there's a really great quote that you said that really just took me, and it sent shivers up my spine. It was in the God Code. It said, "The fate of our entire species rests in the hands of one generation, that is this generation." That really puts things in, it still gives me chills to say
it
puts things in perspective. This is a pivotal, pivotal time.
It is, and even if we didn't know anything about spiritual traditions, ancient understandings, if we didn't know about the Mayan calendar, 2012, or Great World Age, I just had the opportunity and the privilege of spending a week in your part of the world, Lisa, and the UCLA event happened in the middle of the week of a meeting with a group of 45 leaders from corporations. Many of them were authors, lecturers, scientists, all successful in their own right. And among those were evolutionary biologists like Dr. Bruce Lipton and Elizabeth Sartorius, both who are telling us purely from the perspective of a biologist, is that we are well into what is called the sixth mass extinction on planet Earth. There have been five in the past where many life forms simply disappear, and of course new ones then begin to appear. But because we, humankind, this is the first time that we've been involved in one of these, and because we are conscious and aware of our existence and aware that this is happening for the first time, we have the opportunity to turn things around if we can apply, if we have the wisdom to apply the lessons from our past to what we're experiencing right now.
Now, you said extinction.
There have been on planet Earth biologists and paleontologists, geologists are able to see in the ancient record, there have been at least five mass extinctions where many forms of life, for one reason or another, simply die off and disappear. And we are creating a toxic environment in our world right now, contributing to our own demise. And this is one of the topics that comes up a lot when we have these kinds of meetings. Even if we didn't know anything about predictions and prophecies and calendars and all of that, we've got to find new sustainable ways of living our lives. When you put this into context with the cycles of time, however, it takes on even greater meaning because it is at the point in the cycle of time where we find ourselves today that some of the great civilizations of the past made mistakes and they collapsed and disappeared in their cycle 5,000, 10,000 years ago. We now have the ability to learn from their mistakes and hopefully not follow the path that they have made. And the through line that ties all of these things together is the world does change. Earth does change on a cyclic basis. And I can tell you this as a geologist.
Uh-huh.
And we can talk about that if questions come up and I can share with our listeners what we find in the ice cores of Antarctica that tell us that the conditions right now on Earth, the physical conditions, are not so different from where we've been when we reached the point in the cycle in the past where we are now.
Well, Joe, explain a little bit about that. What do you mean
by that? We will. But the key to this is it's less about the physical conditions and more about how we, as individuals and collectively respond to those changes. Do we work together and cooperate to address the changes that come with these cycles, or do we fight one another in our fear of disappearing and dwindling resources, in our fear that there's not enough to go around? Do we begin to grab our slice of a pie and say everybody else can fend for themselves?
And then to take that a step further, do we fight within our own selves with our own limiting beliefs?
Sure.
To cause our own demise, essentially.
Well, this is what the biologists are telling us, why I wanted to talk about Bruce Lipton, Elizabeth Satoris, and others, because what they're telling us is the way that we work within is mirrored in the big world around us. The way that our cells cooperate to make the community that's our body is exactly the way that communities cooperate to make countries, nations, and the principles are precisely the same.
Yes,
fascinating.
So as above, so below, essentially.
Absolutely. So as we come to terms and we can find peace within ourselves in the presence of the greatest changes in recorded human history, and as we find our own personal healing, then that is mirrored in the choices that we make in terms of the businesses that we support, the media that we support, the education that we support. So in this way, it's all tied together in a really very holistic view of our relationship to the world. And this is where this spontaneous healing of belief really, really comes in. When we see the facts as science now is revealing them, and we can see how those facts parallel belief systems, ancient understandings that have been around for 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years, once we see the facts, then our situation in the world becomes obvious and our choices become clear. And without understanding the facts, our choices seem confusing. And this is the spontaneous healing of belief. Once we see the facts, then our beliefs change in the presence of those revelations. When we see beyond a shadow of a doubt or any reasonable doubt, how the relationship between our inner beliefs and the world around us programs the reality of our world, then it becomes much easier for us to change the beliefs within to create the kind of world we'd like to see that surrounds us.
Okay, so let's drill into those a little bit, for lack of a better word, into some of the facts and explain this to us. If you can, I mean, I know where I would want to start, but where would you start with something like that?
You know, we could spend a week's worth of programs on this, but
yes.
the bottom line, our own science now is confirming what many of our most ancient and cherished indigenous and spiritual traditions have always held to be true, and that is that we are connected to everything in this world, including one another. And that we have the ability, that's number one. Number two, that we have the ability to communicate with the stuff that holds everything together in what we see as miraculous ways so that we can actually heal cells in our bodies. I know many of our listeners have probably experienced this for themselves. But we can also tip the scales of life and balance in our favor and create peace in the presence of conflict. And this is really, really important for where we are at this point in our cycle of time, because when we look into the archaeological record, what we find is it's the conflict and the war at the end of the great cycles that bring an end to the civilizations. So if we have a way of tipping the scales of life and peace in our favor, then we have the opportunity to do something that our ancestors apparently, for whatever reason, chose not to do.
Now, do you think that we have evolved since then, just spiritually? I mean, obviously, technologically, we've evolved, and our systems have evolved, basically. But do you think that we have psychologically evolved out of that?
You know, that's a big question, Lisa, and I'm going to answer this with what I understand to be true now, what the research reveals, is that evolution is a cyclic process, and and that the universe, we live in a cyclic universe. Civilization appears to be cyclic, the rise and fall of great civilizations in the past. And when you ask me about spiritual evolution, what I have to say is that there is a strong and growing body of evidence that there have been civilizations in the past that were extremely evolved spiritually in some respects, but had still struggled with how to deal with fear in their lives and in their world, and that fear is what led to the use of the wartime technology that brought an end to the civilizations.
Interesting. It is.
So, and in many respects, I think this is the struggle that we are having today. We are a 21st century civilization. We have put people on the moon. We've got probes that have gone beyond our solar system. We can look into the cells or a woman's womb. The moment a sperm and an egg unite, we can see those first cells begin to develop.
Wow.
We can do all that on the one hand. On the other hand, we're still trying to describe our relationship to the world in a language that's about 5,000 years old, in a language that developed in the 3rd century B.C. And we're struggling with how that language can be applied to what we see happening in our world today. And this brings us back to the question you asked 3 questions ago. With the science, what our own science is showing us, number one, is there, beyond any reasonable doubt, and the scientific community is now on board with this, is there a field of energy that connects all things, including us, and it connects us to all things. So every blade of grass, every hamster, every goldfish, every CEO of every corporation, every leader of every nation, every atom is connected through a field of energy that we're only beginning to understand. That is a fact.
And this is the human energy field?
The human energy field is part of a field that is interwoven. From this perspective, it's hard for us to define where the human field ends and the field of everything else begins.
Interesting. Okay.
So the field is there, and there's very, very little doubt in the scientific community. There are experiments that have been performed, and I describe them in the book, Spontaneous Healing of Belief and the Divine Matrix, for example, of the particles that make an atom. They're called photons.
Mm-hmm.
Photons, they've taken a single photon, split it in half to make twins so that each twin had the same properties as the other one. They have then moved them to a distance of 14 miles apart in opposite directions and performed experiments on one photon in one location, and the other photon, 14 miles away, acted as if it were the one that were having the experiments performed upon it. When they were forced to rotate, one photon would be forced to rotate in one direction, the other one would do the same thing. When they had to choose a path in a maze of what direction to go, the other photon acted, they always made exactly the same choices. And this is important because we're made of the stuff that those photons are made of that create the atoms of our world.
What is that field called, by the way?
It has many, many names. The Divine Matrix is one of those names. Some people simply call it the field. Some are calling it the mind of God.
And what implications does that have on us as humans, knowing that?
That leads to the second fact.
Uh-huh.
So the first fact is that the field exists and it connects all things. The second fact is that we are born with the ability to communicate with this field through a nonverbal language that's based on human feeling and human emotion. And that is a fact, but the controversy comes in terms of how much power we have to influence this field. So the scientific experiments show beyond any reasonable doubt that when we observe a photon or an atom in a laboratory setting, when we are the observers and we look at an electron in an experimental situation, the act of us looking at it and the thinking, the feeling, the emotion underlying the observer actually changes the behavior of that atom. That is a quantum particle, that photon. That's a documented fact. So the controversy and the question then becomes, how much influence do we have over the stuff our world is made of? And that is where the spiritual traditions really throw a monkey wrench into the science, because what they tell us is that our ability to influence our world is directly linked to the focus and our ability to create that focus. And that is where the science is struggling to reconcile what they found in the laboratory with the experiments and the results.
I wonder what that does to all of the PSI, the parapsychology experiments back in the 70s. If we could influence them so much,
sure.
That really, I mean, I wonder how much that had an effect. But on the, you know, the positive application here of all of this, which is the whole concept of this entire teleseminar series, is about bridging science and spirituality. Once we know that we are linked to this field that exists, and that study is just, the photon study is just one of the ones that that Greg has spoken about in the past. Once we know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that field exists, how does this affect long-distance healing, staying connected with other people in other countries, when something happens in Haiti, it happens to us, those types of things?
Well, I think it's less about how it affects it and more about it gives us the mechanism that explains why our prayers and why our good wishes can have a positive influence over long distances. But the key, and there are so many experiments, if I could just back up for about a half a second.
Too much enthusiasm over here. Yes, go
ahead. Well, we're covering so much material, and some of our listeners I know are very familiar with my work, and others may have never heard it before. If you're interested in the science and the spiritual traditions that describe this field of energy, the book, The Divine Matrix, goes into great detail, and the bibliography, I think, is worth the book, just looking at the research that went into that book.
There's a whole, in Greg Braden's special offer that Hay House has been so wonderful to put together, the whole CD series is there, so you can listen to this. It's so fascinating,
okay.
Of the Divine Matrix and everything else.
So that's The Divine Matrix. If you're interested in the language that speaks to The Divine Matrix, that's The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, that talks about our heart-based ability, the heart-based language that communicates with the field. And then, Lisa, you began by speaking about cycles of time. The new book, Fractal Time, tells us about those cycles and our relationship to those cycles. So as we go through this program, we can just reference and without going into a lot of detail now.
Yes. I just want to let people know, if they go to theawareshow.com/Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, Greg Braden's last name, there's 10 items, or I don't know, a lot of items of Greg Braden's on in one place. So basically, you get them all on that special offer. All the things that we were just talking about, the Divine Matrix, the CD and the book, Fractal Time, the Spontaneous Healing of Belief, all of that is just, you just order the whole thing, because you get all of that stuff for the price of basically just one or two of them, and then you only have to pay shipping on once for getting the 7 or 8 items.
Wow.
So it's a really, really good deal. So
see how well this field works. I didn't know that. So
you guys can completely immerse yourself and educate yourself in this, because we cannot possibly, I mean, there's, I don't know, probably 16, 17 hours worth of CDs on this entire package that you guys can learn from. But just so you know, that's up there. Go to that. But let's keep going on this conversation.
Sure.
Right.
Well, I don't want to spend a lot of time on the science, but what I found is, and we talk about this in the book, Spontaneous Healing of Belief, our ancestors used miracles to help them overcome their doubts about their ability to influence their bodies and their world. If they could see someone else performing a miracle, and they understood that all they needed to do was learn the same thing and they could do the same miracle, then that helped them to overcome their doubts. Today, we use science to do the same thing. And if people can understand what the revelations are from the scientific community, then it helps us to transcend our personal doubts about our ability to participate and influence the events in our world, whether it's the peace in our community or at our dinner table or the healing in our bodies. So that's where I think the science is useful. And so the science is telling us, number one, there's a field out there. We know that. A second experiment, a fascinating experiment, is showing that human DNA is directly linked to that field of energy. Human DNA has the ability to influence that field of energy. Their experiments were done, Lisa, where they took these photons, the stuff that atoms are made of, they isolated them, they put them into a container and measured their location, and they were scattered everywhere. They put human DNA into the same container, and all of a sudden those photons weren't scattered. They became very orderly, very aligned. They were influenced by the DNA. So what we're saying is the stuff that our world is made of is influenced by the stuff we're made of. That is experiment number two. That's very important. And the third experiment was done by the Institute of Heart Math right there in Northern California, showing that when we create certain kinds of feelings and emotions in our heart, we actually change the shape of the DNA in our cells. So now we put those experiments together. When we create certain kinds of feelings and emotions in our heart, we change the shape of the DNA that is directly linked to the stuff our world is made of. And those three scientific experiments, I think, give us a reason to feel empowered in our world and link us to our most cherished spiritual traditions, because the feelings that create the effects are the feelings that we have always been taught were the good feelings to have. They are feelings of care and appreciation and gratitude. Those kinds of positive emotions are what trigger the healing effects in our bodies that now are documented as extending beyond our bodies.
Now, this makes sense, because if we learn, if we really, really learn that we are an interactive part of our universe, then we will understand our role in all of it, rather than going to sleep or rather than thinking that we don't make a difference. And this also applies to your everyday living life and your challenges and struggles with life.
Sure.
If you understand the way that you interact with your finances, with your relationships, with your career, with your health, when you really understand the role that you play, this is such a huge, huge point here that I got from everything that Greg is talking about, especially from the spontaneous healing of belief. Then as you say, there are no such things as observers, right?
Absolutely, Lisa. And you know, everyone learns differently, and that's why there are so many really good teachers, authors, lecturers, seminars, workshops. Everyone learns differently. And, you know, my words may not be meaningful to somebody, whereas Bruce Lipton's words or Debbie Ford's words or someone else may be. And I know you've had all these people on your programs in the past. So what we're doing is we're painting a big picture, providing an umbrella for the big picture of how we relate to our world. And then as we hear individual speakers, as Debbie Ford, for example, talks about the shadow effect, or, Marianne Williamson talks about the way we feel about our relationships and our relationship to God. All of those experiences now begin to fill in the missing pieces, and they take on new meaning within this umbrella, because now we come back to the context. We're living the last years of a rare and mysterious cycle of time where the way we feel about ourselves translates into the way we deal with the changes that happen every 5,000 years. And this is the bridge between our most cherished spiritual traditions and the science of today.
And it really influences the changes that we're looking at. One of the things that I got to do at that event at UCLA is I got to ask all about 10 different speakers, you included, the same question, and I asked you and Bruce Lipton and Deepak Chopra and Debbie Ford and all of you guys the same question. What is this shift that we are in right now? What is the importance of this? And the most incredible thing was that you guys all said the same thing, independent of each other, and not necessarily knowing what the last person said in the last interview, because I was there in a little spot interviewing everybody. But it was the fact that we are in a critical time of shift right now, and that we can transform this time of shift with our consciousness, with our thoughts. It is so powerful right now, and I love the fact that you guys spent a whole week together. I saw the bus that you all left on afterwards. I thought the thing would just grow wings and just fly.
Well, you know, for those listeners that may not be familiar with what we're talking about, it was an evening at Royce Hall, UCLA, where this group of people, 45 authors, lecturers, CEOs of corporations, people in politics, people in media, we've come together for the last 3 years, so this is the first time we've done anything publicly. And the purpose of the evening is just what you're talking about, Lisa, was to publicly show it's not just a single group of visionaries or authors or lecturers, but that this group from so many different walks of life are collectively giving a voice to the uniqueness of our time and history in a way that you're not going to see on mainstream media. You're not going to see it in the newspapers. Nobody's going to say, hey, you know, we've reached this critical moment in the history of our civilization. But the title of the evening was called Our Moment of Choice. And what the ancient traditions tell us very clearly, and what our own science now suggests, is that we are at this critical crossroads where the sustainable ways of life, or the unsustainable ways of our past, are now coming up, making themselves very obvious, that they cannot continue the way they are. As the world changes, as Earth goes through its cyclic change, the way that we've chosen to live our lives must adapt to the changes on the Earth. We cannot continue the things that we have been doing for so long. And the things that are breaking down are precisely the ones that are no longer sustainable under the conditions of a changing world. So the economic system, for example, that's based on some people benefiting at the expense of someone else, while that may work in the short term, it certainly is not sustainable in the long run. Providing electricity to a planet by burning a finite source of fossil fuel that destroys the very planet that we love. It worked for 100 years or so, but it's not sustainable in the long run, and it's all catching up with us. So these are the things, if we look at the things that are breaking down, they are the ways of life that are unsustainable. The way we grow food, for example, and the way we share food, the way we transport food from one place to another. And when we begin to see the changes from this perspective, and then we look at the history of civilization and the history of the cycles, and what we see is this is what always happens. Every 5,000 years, when the world changes, Earth grows through changes that we can see in the geologic record, civilizations must change the way they live their lives, or they seem to collapse and disappear. And the big mistake that we see from the past is that if they don't understand this choice, then they fight to maintain an unsustainable way of living, and that's what leads to the wars that destroy everything. So are we making that mistake? And if we are, what can we do to change it now? And that's a lot of what that evening at Royce Hall was all about.
Well, that's a lot of what, it is that you're talking about, is that this is absolutely a time of transformation, not only global transformation, personal transformation, financial transformation, a health transformation. I mean, it's all happening now. And what I love about Greg and all of his incredible vast body of work is that he so eloquently gives the history and the science behind all of this, which he has spent, you know, years and years doing. I wish I was able to regurgitate all of this just the way that you do and be a part of this, the world travel that you've done. It's so great that you get to follow Greg and all of his travels and his incredible experiences where he's gone to the caves in the monasteries and read the ancient scripts and the texts. And gosh, your knowledge is so vast. It's so great. In one of the things offered in the special offer, The Secrets of the Lost Mode of Prayer, one of my favorite little books, it talks about, you know, one of the listeners here is saying, where do we find the text that was edited out of the Christian Bible?
Sure.
And it's in that little beautiful book. I mean, it's this hidden, beautiful wisdom that's in there that basically talks about the law of attraction, interestingly enough.
In a very ancient way. And,
ancient, yeah.
And thank you for your kind words, Lisa. And you know, the search is ongoing. The journey continues. But what I'm sharing with each of these works, as well as is many of the other authors that were with me that night, is what we know so far. We don't have all the answers, and we could study for another 100 years and not have all the answers, but the science is saying we don't have that much time, that we can apply what we do know to our lives to become better people and create a better world. And interestingly enough, it all comes back to some of the core cherished traditions of our oldest spiritual teachings. And what is so interesting about that to me is that these are the very principles that were edited out from the early Christian Bible in the 4th century, the power of human emotion to influence our bodies and our world. Those are the very texts that we find in the Gospel of Thomas, for example, and some of the Gnostic and the Coptic traditions. So, and those are all referenced in all the books. We can't go through all those on the
right.
Internet.
Well, I will tell people, though, they can go to the website, yeah, which is theawareshow.com/Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, and the special offer there explains everything. All of Greg's, there's about 8 or 9, 10 different items of Greg's, and they're all in there. About 16 hours of CDs that you can also learn from. Incredible stuff. I have to ask a question that one of the listeners is asking. This is Ed from Oaklawn, Illinois. What is the most profound miracle you have been involved with? That is such a great question.
The most profound miracle.
You've done so much, Greg. I was listening to your, you know, the spontaneous healing of belief and how you went into the cave of, what was the indigenous master, the yogi master?
Milarepa.
Milarepa.
Yeah, I'm going to begin. It's a very good question, and I appreciate you asking that. And I'm just going to begin by saying my experience is that a miracle is only a miracle until we understand how it is performed. Then it's no longer a mysterious miracle. It becomes a technology that we can actually perform and apply again and again.
Wow.
So with that as a preface, when I was in, I think it was my first trip into Tibet, which would have been, first trip into Tibet, I believe, was 2001. It was right before 9/11, actually. And I had the opportunity to see a film, a brief film that I've shared with many audiences all over the world, of a cancerous tumor inside the body of a living woman, disappear in less than 3 minutes. In the presence of 3 practitioners who knew how to communicate with her body, and through the miracle of an ultrasound, a sonogram, we could see her body respond to the feelings that the practitioners were creating in their hearts. So they were feeling the feeling. This is a quantum principle. They were coming from the outcome that the woman was already healed. So they began with the end product rather than the linear thinking that healing has to happen a little bit at a time and is a long, slow process. It's a very subtle but very powerful concept. In their hearts, they felt the feeling as if the woman was already healed, and I saw her body respond to that in less than 3 minutes. She went from having a life-threatening cancer to being cancer-free. And what that said to me was that these people have preserved a way of living and a knowledge without the science, that our science is only beginning to explain without the practice. Science doesn't know how to put it into motion, but they know the principle. The ancient traditions know how to put it in motion, but they don't know how to explain it. And this is where science, so this, for me, this is the bridge. Science tells us the nuts and bolts of why something is possible and how it works, and the spiritual traditions give us the application and the way to apply it in our lives.
Yeah, I saw that video too, and that was fascinating because you could literally see the tumor shrink before your eyes. That was amazing.
And then disappear. It's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just incredible. Super tanting. Here's another really great question coming in from Sheila from Chicago. What if only some of us do what's necessary to make the changes?
You know, that is a beautiful question as well, because the old way of thinking is that it takes X number of people and what's called the 100th monkey to tip the scales of balance of change. And there are actually, and I talk about this in some of my previous books, there are percentages that have been calculated based on statistical evidence of that change. That's the old way of thinking. And what the new studies are showing is that quantum principle, it's not about the number of people. It's about the quality of the inner experience for the people that are participating. So here's what I mean by that. September 11th, 2001, the satellites, two satellites above North America sending signals back every 30 minutes, showing us the strength of the magnetic fields of the Earth. And September 11, 2001, those readings went off the chart. And it was the first time that scientists learned that human emotion, the human emotion of millions of people watching their televisions in response to 9/11 was so great that it actually tripped spiked the magnetic fields of the Earth that sustain and control all, or sustain and link all life. And what it told us was that we have the ability to influence the very fields that connect all things and all people. Since that time, the question has arisen, can we do it without the tragedy of September 11th? Can we learn the techniques that speak to these fields without having a tragedy to trigger a heart-based experience?
Good question.
And
yeah.
The answer to that is telling us that if we can achieve what is called coherence in our lives, and I know you've had some of your programs, Howard Martin and people from the Institute of Heart Math, talking about heart-brain coherence. It's the signal between the heart and the brain that is established when we feel the feelings of care or appreciation or gratitude. When we create those kinds of feelings, there is a link set up between our heart and our brain. It's a conversation. And in that conversation, we elicit the healing within our own bodies, very strong immune systems, and we also find that the effects extend beyond our bodies into our families, into our communities, and even across the ocean in terms of cooperation and healing and peace. And the reason I'm sharing these kinds of stories is because the studies are showing it doesn't take that many people to create the effect. The key is for those who are participating to speak the language of the heart very, very clearly. So it's less about numbers and more about the quality of the experience we have in our bodies. And for me, that's very encouraging because it means that many, many people can benefit from the wisdom and the choices.
That's encouraging.
Of a heart-based way of living from just a few.
So you can. And also, someone else is asking, where is God in all of this matter? If they're just, you know, the question about the concept of God in all of this, do you maintain a spiritual practice? How do you approach that?
Well, you just asked three questions. Where is God? Do I maintain a spiritual practice? And how do I approach that? So I'm going to start with...
At least I know you're listening. Yes, this
is
true.
The first question, the moment we draw a line between where God ends and everything else begins, I think is the moment where we fall into the ancient trap of the separation.
Ah.
So the concept of God is obviously deep and personal, and some people like to assign a personality to God. And it's probably more than I can do justice to in the time we have tonight, but what I'll say is that what I just said is, where do you draw the line to separate God from everything else? And the moment you draw that line, then we fall into that trap of separation, because that intelligence as I see it, the intelligence that underlies all things is in all things, and that is what we call God.
Now that's the best way that I've heard it said, and that makes a lot of sense that we fall right back into that trap because it's back into separation. Absolutely.
It is. It's the ancient trap. It's a similar trap between light and dark. If people say, well, where, you know, how do you support light or how do you support the dark? And when you draw that line, the moment we draw the line between light and dark, we fall into the ancient trap of judgment that keeps us in the polarities locked into the struggle that we're in right now. And I talk about that extensively in the book, Spontaneous Healing of Belief.
I was just about to say, back to that concept, those limiting beliefs that we have had, those false beliefs that we are limited, basically, is what puts us into that place of separation and fear. And someone is asking from Chicago again. A lot of people coming from Chicago today. How we do eliminate that fear, because it's something that you might know.
How we eliminate the experience of fear? From in my experience, and again, we talk about this extensively in the book, through case histories and through experience, I don't think that you can eliminate it, because the moment we try to make fear go away, we are in judgment of whatever it is that we feel threatens us. What we are, our best bet is to redefine what fear means in our lives and allow fear, the experience of fear, to serve us rather than to subordinate us and to threaten us. So I think fear is a very natural human response. It's what fear means to us and the significance that we give to the fear that either incapacitates and debilitates us or strengthens and empowers us.
Because it is there for a reason. I mean, originally, it was put into it's part of our DNA, yes?
It is, and there are times, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, does our fear serve us? And and it's about redefining the significance of the fear in our lives. What does that fear mean to us? Where does it come from? Is it justified? Is there something really to fear, or is there, does that fear stem from a conditioning or a pattern? This is where a program like this, it gets so deep, because what the biology and the psychology tells us, Lisa, is that the way we view the world is based on conditioning that happens to humans generally between the ages of birth and 6 years old. And during that time, we are like little sponges that, in what's called a hypnagogic state. We're not fully in beta consciousness. And during that time, we tend to take on the beliefs and see the world through the eyes of those who care for us, our primary caretakers. And so that's why a lot of times we'll have, I mean, a fear of the dark is a perfect example. If you walk out in the dark just because you cannot see what's around you, for some people, it's comforting and they feel like they're enveloped in a womb. For other people, it's the most frightening thing they could imagine because anything could be there to get them. So where does that conditioning come from? And this is where a lot of the psychological processes and understanding our subconscious programming really comes into play. Are the fears justified?
Well, that's why I like the sub. I mean, if you guys were to get this special offer for just this one thing, this is amazing, because it's about shattering the paradigm of false limits. That's the subtitle of the Spontaneous Healing of Belief. It's about shattering paradigms that keep us in those states of war or poverty or ill health. These are things that Greg was just talking about.
Or relationships that fail before they even begin, or feeling that we're not worthy to have a relationship or to be supported in our passions and our life.
And even career failure.
Absolutely. It applies to everything. I love that subtitle. I haven't heard anyone say it for a long time, and I'm just listening to you share the subtitle. And, you know, our publisher, in the advice that they give their authors, really felt like the title and the subtitle were too long. And I tried shortening them, and to me, they say exactly what I want them to say, and so I went with it.
Well, it makes sense when you listen to the CD, too, because you really go into it. Greg goes into this for a long period of time about where we're, how we're raised and who we listen to and who our guides are when we're being raised and how all of that is, enters right into the subliminal programming that we then carry with us the rest of our lives. So take that to a global scale.
Absolutely.
What's our history?
In the book, there are actually, there's exercises and there's a little test that I've done in huge audiences all over the world that help us to understand. Most people that take the tests are so sharp, they know how to answer the questions just the right way, so they'll never find out what their subconscious beliefs are. So this test is designed, you don't know where it's going. And when we answer the, I even, when I know where it's going, I still find new things about myself. When I take the test in the spontaneous healing of belief, and I answer those questions, and then overlay them onto a template, it tells us, it gives us insight into our unconscious beliefs from our primary caretakers. And it's fascinating insight into why we deal with life the way we do, and whose eyes we see life through. Are they really ours, or are we living somebody else's fears?
Yes, isn't that fascinating that, again, on a global scale, what has our history taught us that has basically been our limiting belief of the fact that we have to have demise as a civilization? Isn't that interesting? I mean, that's the whole concept here. And once again, if you go to the website, which is theawareshow.com/Braden, if you click on the special offer button there, there are over 11 different items of Greg's incredible body of work and 16 hours of CDs. Some of the books are read on CD, which is really a great way to be able to hear them and to learn and to get the pictures painted. I love the way, I guess that's why I love your voice, because I've been listening to a lot of the CDs lately. And a lot of the stories that you tell, the great stories of places that Greg's been, but you really learn a lot from the history that Greg explains in his books and his CDs. But the wonderful thing about this special offer is that if you were to go to the Hay House site, in individually ordered all of these things, it would cost you double what it would cost just to do it in this one place, which is Hay House's wonderful gift to you guys for being a part of this teleseminar series, is putting all of this and bundling all this together for just a very limited amount of time, just a 48-hour period, and then you only have to pay shipping on once for all of it. So it's a really great way of putting all of this information into one place and shifting, shattering your old belief systems. And the whole purpose of Greg's message, which I find putting all of this together, is the fact that not only are all of us linked together, as he explained earlier with the photon splitting experiments and so forth, but our career, our health, our relationships are all linked to our beliefs. So that means, on a larger scale, that peace between nations begins with our thoughts, that our life's improvement begins with our thoughts, and that this is all based on scientific experimentation that's being done around the world, but Greg puts it in one place. And again, you don't hear this type of thing on mass media because it doesn't feed into the fear that mass media is giving us with the Armageddon movies of the 2012 and the end of the world as we know it and all that stuff. This is the positive solution, but this is the way that I believe it was intended. That's my belief.
Well, I love it when you talk that way, Lisa. You know, the beauty of what the science is showing us, and again, I was trained as a scientist, originally as a geologist, and so my first instinct when people began asking me about what we could realistically expect for 2012 was to look at the 2012s of the past. And when we go into places like the ice core records of Antarctica and Greenland, for example, where we have, for every year of Earth's history for 500,000 years, we can look at a layer of ice and we can tell what the temperatures were like and what the sea levels were like and how strong the sun's energy was and the magnetic fields, and we can tell what the climate was doing. When we go in and look at that history, what we find is Earth right now is where Earth always is when we go through one of these cycles, that we're living a rare, but it's a natural change in our world, the key is how we respond as individuals and culturally and socially. How do we respond to a changing world? And that's where the archaeological record comes in, because when we look at the history of people during the times of those changes, what we find, a perfect example is on the border between India and Pakistan. Right now, a highly advanced civilization, hot and cold running water, closed sewage systems, astronomical knowledge, that civilization collapsed and disappeared right at the end of a great world age. We're finding another one in northern Peru right now. We've actually, I was given access and we were allowed to document this site. It's the oldest civilization in all the Americas, older than anything in the Mayan or the Aztec traditions, right at that 5,000-year mark. So the question is, what can we learn from our ancestors in the past about the time in history we're living now? And what we find is that our personal beliefs and the way we see ourselves in the world translates into the way we deal with these big challenges. And that's, I think, where this all comes together.
Marcy from Canada is asking a really interesting question. How can someone learn to consciously interact with this field, and where does one begin to learn?
Okay, that's a beautiful question, and that was two questions. Where we can learn is you, Marcy, and all of us are interacting with the field every moment of every day in your life, in your world, tell you about the quality of the conversation you're having with your world. Your relationships, your career, your abundance, your health, all of those are part of the conversation, ongoing conversation that you're putting out to this field, and the field is giving back to you 24/7, 365. There's never a time we're not speaking to the field. The key, and you said, you mentioned this in your question, is to be conscious and aware of what we're saying to this field and how the field answers us and responds us. It's like this continuous feedback mechanism. If we don't like what's happening in the world around us, if we don't like the people that we're surrounded with in our workplace, or we don't like the bottom line in the checkbook, or we don't like the quality of our most intimate relationships, what we are invited to do is to change our part of that conversation. And this is where the spiritual traditions give us the principles. The science tells us why it works, and once we understand why it works, we know what to do more of and what to do less of. And this is why there's so many amazing teachers. They don't tell the big story, the big picture that I'm giving now, but the amazing teachers that give us bits and pieces about, you know, maybe the law of attraction, or maybe personal healing and how to transcend cancer in our lives, or, you know, something like that. It all falls under this umbrella. And everyone learns differently, but the key is that we're living in a 21st century technology, and we're trying to explain our existence using a 5,000-year-old language. And I think this is the generation that gets to update that language.
And it isn't just, I mean, I often thought this is just a conversation that's limited to a few, but it's not. I mean, the reason why there's thousands of people on this teleseminar, and that the reason why that there's such a peak of interest, is because it's the individuals that make up the whole in this case, and more and more and more people are starting to understand these concepts. So those that are not, and what sparked on this is somebody was asking, how do I tell this to people in my family who are completely unconscious of these concepts? And, I mean, giving them one of Greg's CDs is a really good start.
You know, you can, but my experience, honestly, and I know a lot of people don't always like the answer that I'm going to share, but if you try, I believe as individuals, we can only share with other people that which we know to be true for ourselves.
Ooh,
not
true.
Not what we've heard from someone else. So I think the best way to do it is to live what these principles mean in our lives, and other people pick up the subtle cues. When we make changes in our own lives, in our family, in our workplace, other people will pick up those subtle cues. But if we go in and say, this is the way things work, the first time someone asks a question for more understanding, and we cannot answer that because we don't know it for ourselves, we lose credibility, and the conversation generally tanks right about that time.
It goes back to the phrase, be the change that you want to see in the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think almost universally, people know, it's no secret that something is up in the world. It's not business as usual. And it's not just these conversations. I mean, Scientific American, the journal Scientific American, maybe this is a place to begin. The September 2005 issue of Scientific American, it was a special edition alerting the world to the fact that we are in a period of crisis. And the term was called Crossroads for Planet Earth. And it said, if we don't figure these things out pretty quick, nothing else is going to make much difference. So that tells us that we're in trouble. But the beauty of a crisis is it's not over yet, and it's calling to our attention situations that we can still remedy. And now, how do we go about those remedies? Look at the science and share with your family scientific discoveries of the fact that human emotion changes the shape of DNA, and that DNA actually communicates with atoms, physical atoms in our world. So if you change the way you feel, you're literally communicating with atoms in our world. And what we begin to understand is this is what's called the great secret, Lisa, that everybody knows except us in the modern technological world. This is the indigenous tradition and the ancient wisdom in so many of our most cherished texts now being offered to us in the modern language of science and quantum physics.
Again, well, yes. And that's beautiful, because now we can really assimilate this and really start to understand the concept and make the changes in our own lives, and then see the changes beyond our own lives into, you know, peace between nations, as you say. And it begins with our thoughts. There's so much to be, I just thank you so much for even spending this hour and absorbing this information with us and sharing it with all of us. If you guys go to theawareshow.com/Braden, you click on the special offer there. There's at the bottom of the special offer, there is a free gift for all of you guys who stayed on the call. If you go to the bottom of that page, it's an excerpt from Fractal Time, one of Greg's books, and it really gives you a sense of his writing and how history repeats in love and war. And just, I mean, it's the secret of 2012, eventually, is what the subtitle of Fractal Time is, because it's not the end of something, it's the beginning of something incredible, and it's the tipping point that we're in right now of raising the consciousness about that, that makes it the beginning, and makes it something new, and makes it something about consciousness. Mm-hmm. And that's what that's what these calls are all about. That's what Greg talks all about. That's why we bundle all the stuff together in the special offer, so you guys can do whatever you can to raise your consciousness and be educated, and then pass the information on to your family members and to your friends so that they can get it in a grounded, scientific way that they can hear it and make changes themselves. It's happening. We're at that point. Absolutely.
So, Lisa, are you telling me that our time is over?
Not necessarily. We can keep going.
Okay. Well, can we for a few minutes?
Yes, definitely.
Well, because, you know, we hear all of this. I mean, we've covered so much ground, and we could. I mean, we could continue for the rest of the evening and touch on so many elements of this conversation. And it's not really about the individual elements. It's about bringing them all together. From my perspective, it's about bringing them all together into something that we can apply in our lives and making sense out of what's happening in the world. It is obvious that something, my mom and I have this conversation all the time, and she always says to me, you know, there are all these things I'd like to do when things get back to normal. So it's like she has a feeling that something in the world changed, but it's temporary, and she's waiting for things to get back to normal. And I say, well, what is normal, Mom? And she said, well, you know, the way things were. And I said, I think this is the way things are going to be. And we are living in a very, very different world. It happened maybe for some people when we weren't looking. And all of a sudden, one day we said, you know, we're in a very different world. But the key is that the Earth is going through a rhythmic physical change, a cyclic change. It's not broken. We weren't expecting it. Most people in the modern industrialized world were not. Those listeners who have always been on a spiritual path and understood indigenous traditions were certainly expecting it because we've been warned for 5,000 years. But the key is, how do we change our lives to meet the challenges of a changing world? And that can only change when we shift what it is that we think and believe to be true in our world. And this is the value, I think, Lisa, of this teleseminar series and others. And you do such a beautiful job and such a service to your listeners, because together we give people a good reason, a solid factual reason to change what we all believe about ourselves. And once that shifts, then it becomes obvious that the way we live our lives must change as well. And then the question is, what do we do? And if I could, I'd just like to address a couple of those things, because this, it comes up, the evolutionary leaders that met at UCLA. This was one of the big topics. You know, once we understand these things, what do we really do to make a change? Because it seems so big, and we seem so small and insignificant. But the answer to that question is that our individual choices, the things that we do every day to live our lives within that day, become our collective answer to our time in history. And it goes from the kinds of business and industry that we support to the way we nourish our families, all of those things. So media is a big, one of the big topics. There's a growing body of scientific evidence showing that the images that we surround ourselves with, what we watch on cable networks, what we watch on television, what we support in the theater, that the images we surround ourselves with quickly become the reality of our world. So when we go to the theater, you know, on Saturday afternoon, are we actually entertaining ourselves? Is that all we're doing? Or are we really programming the reality that we're going to live within a few weeks or months? And if that's true, then it's important that we offer a balanced perspective, life-affirming kinds of programming in media. And that's why the AWARE show, and that's why programs like this, I think, are so powerful. So the first question, what is it we support in terms of media?
Mm-hmm.
What do we support in terms of industry? Do we support industries and products from industries that actually betray the principles that we're describing? And, you know, amazingly enough, some of the corporations that have had really bad reputations in the past are making huge strides toward green and sustainable ways of producing products. Walmart is one of those.
It became a popular thing to do, yes.
It did. Target is one of those. Mm-hmm. 3M is one of those. Without government sanctions and government prodding, they chose to put money into green and sustainable ways of producing their products. And I'm not saying they've got it perfect, but I'm saying that they're making that effort, and I think it's important to support that effort. The way we grow food. You know, do we support corporate farms that bring chemically and mass-produced food grown from sterile seeds halfway around the world with a big carbon footprint to get it to us? Or do we support the local organic produce that comes from two blocks away that isn't subject to so many of the problems that those other foods have? We live here in northern New Mexico, and for example, a couple of years ago, there was problems with bacteria on spinach, and everybody stopped eating spinach.
Right.
And again, on tomatoes, but the restaurants here didn't have to worry about it because all the produce came, you know, from farms that were just a couple of miles away. We knew where it came from.
Amazing. Speaking of which, how is that storm, by the way?
The storm is actually
calmed down.
Well, it's not raining on my skylight anymore, but we've had big lightning, and I'm actually, after this program, I've got a big drive to another city, so we'll see what happens this afternoon.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because someone is asking, and she's in Florida, what all of this has to do with these weather changes and how to deal with it. And, I mean, her question is the way that weather affects people, and the pain it might cause with the floods and with things like that, how do you use this concept of oneness and transformation when there is natural disaster, essentially?
Okay, first, I think it helps to understand why the problem is happening. And I'm just going to give a nutshell overview. The systems of the earth, these cycles, and in the books and live programs, you know, we go into this in great detail, and I can show you the charts and the graphs from the ice cores in Antarctica, for example.
Ooh, fascinating.
The magnetic fields of the earth are like a blanket that protect us from the energy, what's called the solar wind. And on a cyclic basis, the magnetic fields ebb and they flow. They get stronger and they get weaker. When they get weaker, more energy from the sun penetrates onto the surface of the earth and the oceans, and the temperatures warm. And as the temperatures warm, the ice melts. The ice, that melted ice, is the water that causes the ocean levels to rise and changes the currents. That's what changes the climate in the northern and southern hemisphere, and that's what triggers changes in weather patterns and the big storms and things like that we're seeing. If we know that, then we know that when we are in one of these cyclic times, we can expect we're going to see in the mountains in northern New Mexico and Arizona, we're seeing huge snowfalls. And you just know that that's going to happen. If you're in a coastal city, you're going to see some big storms, very different than what we've seen in the past. The key to all of these, and what the biologists tell us for any life form, the key is cooperation. Knowing that we're going to have these problems, and when they do happen, working together, cooperating to help people that are having the problems, number one. But there are preparations that can be made. Because we're in the cycles, we know these things are going to happen. So it's about, I think, preparation. Responsible preparation, not being survivalist, but knowing that you're going to have these storms and extremes, and actually the global warming that we've heard so much about, what the data suggests very strongly, that global warming leveled out late 90s, early 2000s, and that we are now, the next part of the cycle is the cooling cycle that comes after the warming, and the cooling is usually more of a problem than the warming is.
Has the global warming really leveled out? I was just asking.
The ocean temperatures and the surface temperatures appear, what the data is showing is that it leveled out in the late 90s, early 2000s. And, of course, that's an average. There's some places that are higher, some places that are lower.
Right.
But when you – and I showed one of these charts briefly when I was at Royce Hall. It's based on the ice core samples from Greenland and the North Pole and Antarctica and the South Pole, Antarctica. Is that the global warming is relatively brief. It's intense, and we've certainly had some very intense years.
Yeah.
But it's relatively brief, and then it stabilizes, and then we go into the cooling cycle, which many of the UN scientists say that we're already in that cooling cycle, and we can expect that over these next few years in the Northern Hemisphere. So the cooling is more of a problem than the warming, and nobody's really talking much about that right now.
In what way, on a global level?
Well, the majority of the world's population is in the Northern Hemisphere, because the continents, the landmass, most people live north of the equator. And the Northern Hemisphere is where the cooling has, because of the tilt and the angle of the Earth, it has a greater effect. More food is grown in the Northern Hemisphere. So it affects our ability to grow food, and certainly, I mean, tough winters in northern Europe, and, you know, in the northern parts of the states, you know, we know what havoc those can wreak on our ability to grow food and our transportation system.
That's true, yes.
So, it's not a prediction. I'm saying if the cycles and the trends of the past 10,000 years, if they hold into what we're seeing now, that we'll see the cooling cycle.
Interesting. All right, so one last question I do want to ask you.
Sure.
Back to the question of the person in North Carolina. What is your spiritual practice when you wake up in the morning and throughout your day, which I know is very busy and has a lot of travel, and I know that you have to keep a pretty intense schedule. What is your practice in all of that?
Well, I'm going to answer that the way I answered a previous question, and I'm going to say what I have found personally is the moment I separate my day from my spiritual practices when I get into trouble.
Okay.
So
yeah.
my day is my spiritual practice. Mm. And the challenges that cross my path, and you can imagine in business, in publishing, in travel, family, all of those things, every one of those is a spiritual matter. My belief, my experience is that life is the spiritual practice. Now, I have physical practices. I've had a yogic practice that I've had since for the last 40 years. It's been one of the most consistent things in my life. A series of things I learned when I was in Tibet that I've learned in India and I've learned from great teachers and mystics here in the States. And there are certainly physical practices that I do, but the way that I address every challenge that crosses my path, whether it's with Hay House or with a phone call or, and I'm not saying that I have problems with Hay House, my publisher, but, you know, whatever it is that crosses my path, that's the spiritual practice. And I think that's where what I call the spiritual, that's where the spiritual rubber meets the road of life, I think is the way you can say that.
One of the ones that I learned from you that I absolutely loved, and I think it was from the lost mode of prayer, was the gratitude practice. And I absolutely loved that practice of acting as if things have already occurred and being grateful for them. And I use that all the time. My little girl this morning says to me, she's 7, she said, "Mommy, when you wish for something, when does it come true?" And I thought that was such a great question because she was looking for a time or an immediate something. And I said to her, I said, "When it's supposed to." And that pretty much sucked as an answer from a 7-year-old perspective.
Yeah, so now she knows her mom's a guru now.
Because she wanted it now. But if she's been, and I just said, I said, there's three things that you can do when you have a wish is one, wish for it every day. Two, do some type of an action around making it happen. And three, it's got to help other people. So I said the last thing is being grateful for it already happening. And it's something that I do remember from what you had shared with us in that particular book. So it's a great method. And I also want to just tell people you can get everything that we've been talking about in terms of Greg's amazing body of work. There's 11 different items in the special offer package, and it's just for one very crunched down price, which Hay House has put together and made possible for us. So I just want to thank them for doing all of that. But you have the opportunity from being on this call to know about this special offer. It doesn't exist anywhere else. It's just for the people that have heard this call and get the clue that they can go to the website and order it. If you go to theawareshow.com/Braden and you click on the special offer button, then you will be able to get to all of the items listed. And there's also a, on the bottom there, there's a thank you gift. It's a couple of chapters from Greg's latest book, Fractal Time. That is your latest book, right?
It is until next year.
Which one are you working on right now, right?
There is a new book that will be delivered to our wonderful publisher, Hay House, next spring. It is called Deep Truth. And it I'm really excited about this book because it is an exploration of 4 key discoveries that change everything that we thought we knew about what the world, our relationship to the world, and how those changes apply in our lives.
I want you back on for that one. That sounds fascinating.
Well, it really is, and it's challenging some of the deepest, most cherished beliefs in terms of evolution, in terms of civilization, in terms of how long we've been on this planet, where we came from, but the science and the discoveries are right there, and we have to either look at them and acknowledge them or turn away, and the choice is up to us. And I think it's no accident that now at the end of this cycle, we get to redefine who we are, our relationship to the world, and I think this is all part of it.
Is the world flat again? Are we going to go back?
No. No, but I want to tell you, I really appreciate you, your willingness to take a few extra minutes at the close. It, to me, the top of the hour felt a little abrupt because we covered so much material so quickly, and I wanted the opportunity just to talk through some of those principles and concepts a little bit more leisurely and just to share a little deeper, and I appreciate your willingness to do that, Lisa, and all you guys do to just to keep these series going and KPFK and the Aware Show and all
well,
the things you do
you.
To support this community.
You know what? It's because I have so much enthusiasm for everything that you talk about, and I want to get it out, and I know we only have an hour, and I just want to just...
Well, today we have an hour-ish.
Good. We had a little bit longer, but I really wanted to share with people what the concepts are that you have. You're just one of the pinnacle thinkers in this entire planet, and I'm just really excited about what you have to share. So I thank you
so much. Thank you very much. I appreciate your kind words. And everyone listening tonight, I'm going to say take good care, and thank you for all that every one of you do every day in your lives to make this a better world and to become better people. And I think that's where it all begins.
Yeah, absolutely. It absolutely does. All right. Thank you so much, Greg.
Take good care.
You too. And I look forward to seeing you again, okay?
I will. I look forward to that as well the next time.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. So you can go to theawareshow.com/Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N. And if you click on the special offer there, as I mentioned earlier, this is the only place that offer exists. His publisher, Hay House, has bundled together these items just for this call, exclusively for you guys. We are very grateful for them for doing that, especially when it comes to Greg's enormous information. There's 16 hours of CDs. There's 11 different items, but they're all so good and so groundbreaking and just shifts your consciousness. So check out the special offer. There's a thank you gift at the bottom of the special offer. So if you go to theawareshow.com/Braden, B-R-A-D-E-N, and if you click on the special offer button there, the big orange button, scroll to the bottom of that page and you'll see a few excerpts of his book of Fractal Time, which is also an amazing book within itself. Talks all about the systems and so forth that we talked about at the end of this 5,000-year cycle. So all of that information is on there for you guys. Enjoy it, and thank you so much. And tomorrow we're going to talk a little bit more about how to change this consciousness that we're talking about, this subliminal programming that we got into for the first 6 years of our life. So stick with me tomorrow as well. And I am so completely committed to communicating all of this information as clearly as possible. In the end, I always tell you to listen to your own truth in everything. This is Lisa Garr, and I invite you all to stay aware.